as you hear the prophecies at the beginning, you're always like, this is right in tune. You're listening to it going, holy cow, this is just fits. It just mends together. Like, you know, you think of somebody weaving something and then pushing the weaves together, and you're like going, wow, that's incredible. And so I see that as I hear the other prophecies that come out, and I'm like going, and I know what the teaching is. Nobody else does. And I'm like going, thank you. Thank you. I'd love to be able to see that. Okay, I am going to start off here. One thing I do with my teachings is I kind of do a little bit of education, so I mix a couple things in with them so that I can get it out. And I think the reason why is because there's so much misinformation in the world today within the Word, within news, within media, and it's really disappointing. And so I'm like going, so any time that I get the opportunity to try to do that, to break out good information, I try to do it. So I incorporate a little bit here because it is important. And as Chuck and I were talking about this earlier this week, that a lot of the things that we see that come up, they may seem like they're just like an annoyance or a nuisance or, you know, just a little bit of a... You think about having, like, in my socks when I'm working outside and I get a cockleburr in my socks. And every step I'm taking, I'm just like, ugh! And then I'll try to pull it out. And then I'll think I've got it and I keep going and it's still there. And then I'm like going, you're coming out. Even if I have to take my boot off and take that sock out, I'm winning right now. And so you think about that. But a lot of times, I think what happens is the adversary is involved with these things to distract, to pull away, to steal anyway, any little bit that can be sidetracked over to an agenda outside of what Yahweh's agenda is stealing away. And so, and are we part of that? Have we been involved in that? Yeah, some of the things come at our front door, and we're like, this is not what I want to have to deal with right now, but we do, those things come up. So forget that. Those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. What experience and history teach us is that people in government never have learned anything from history or acted on principles deducted from it. Okay? And this is true. And then probably my favorite one from Winston Churchill. The one thing we've learned from history is that we don't learn from history. There is no difference. You can go through any time period and people will try to rediscover the wheel. Okay? And so we're in the same boat as well. So I kind of do a little bit with this. And this does blend in with my teaching as well, but I want to show a couple other things, because where we see as a temperature gauge of our country and as a world right now, where are we and what are we looking at? This book by Kirby Anderson called The Decline of a Nation, and it was kind of interesting how they went through this, and I'm guessing Kirby is a guy, but I'm not positive. Each of the great civilizations in the world passed through a series of stages from their birth to the decline and to their death. Historians have studied this to find out the decline of a nation from the beginning, infancy, all the way through the destruction of it. And what's funny is they both start out at the exact same point and end at the exact same point. In other words, once they get to the point, which is bondage, okay, that's where they start from, and that's where they end from. The start and end of a country, okay, or a nation. Historians have listed the 10 stages, okay, and these are them. Bondage to spiritual faith. And so what you're saying is when I'm going through this, it's a movement from one phase into the other phase. So a movement from bondage to spiritual faith, two is spiritual faith to great courage, three is the movement from great courage to liberty, four is the movement of liberty to abundance, five is the abundance to selfishness. And when I say selfishness, this is like the vanity we're talking about, where people become self-absorbed and everybody now starts to go against each other. Selfishness to complacency to apathy. Number eight, they're moving from apathy to moral decay. Number nine, moral decay to dependence. And number 10, dependence to bondage. And so it'd be interesting to ask people, what stage do you think you are? Because a country is going to fall into one of these types of things. And so where are we within a country? And boy, you know, you look over there and you're like going, I would definitely say we're on the right side of that column. And so what's interesting about this, because the Kirby Anderson is a Christian that put this together. Now, he did the study and pulled all the studies together, but he said in there, he footnoted it multiple times, and he goes, in his footnotes, he says, subject to change at any point is subject to change. Nineveh was one of the examples that he used. Nineveh was subject for destruction. Okay, and what happened is they could go from number 9 or number 10 all the way back to where they were back in grace with Yahweh. Okay, and so that's the whole thing with it, is that most countries, they'll go through these 10 stages and then start over again. Okay, after they've been run into bondage and done everything incorrect. But it can change. Revivals can change. And so there's times where something comes up and shakes it to say, hey, don't do this. Let's stop this. Stop this insanity. Okay. Here's what the one thing that you will hear most people say. It's kind of the same thing where, you know, somebody who's a drug addict, you know, and people will always start off saying, well, it won't happen to me. I can control it. Okay, well, it's the same thing. This will never happen here. Okay, or our country is different. That's the same things that's said throughout history. Absolutely, the people. If this is where you're going, the road you're going down, then this is what's going to take place. This one here was a book by Carl F. Henry, and it was a twilight of a great civilization. Okay, this one here. This is what's neat about him, because he links this. He links it to about five guys. I've listed four of them. He said, in modern history, Western civilization, if you will, where we've come and what has shaped our thoughts, he goes, can a lot of that be stemmed down to four men, four people? And so he goes, this is from these four, from what's happened, what's taken place. But then he also mentions what took place with, like, Martin Luther. Okay, the Reformation of Europe, some of the things that took place where they were going down the wrong path, and you had somebody come in and shake it up for the good, which is always available. That can always take place. But false ideas are bringing about the decline of Western culture. These are things out of his book. New is the barbarism. There is a new barbarism. This barbarism has embraced a new pagan mentality, not simply rejecting the legacy of the West, but embracing a new pagan mentality where there is no fixed truth. And we see that now, where there is no fixed truth. Everything's, you know, subject to how I feel, or what the consensus is, or what the popular vote is. And I always love that. People say, well, the people should decide. And I'm like, going, that's like the sheep sitting down with five foxes, and they're going to vote what's for dinner. Does that sound pretty just? You know, no, of course not. And so by virtue of that, this is that there is fixed truth. There absolutely are. Influence of intellectual leaders who profoundly affect the modern world. Okay, and these were kind of interesting, because before I read the whole thing, I've kind of, in my mind, I'm like, well, when he said the five, I'm like, okay, let me see if I can pick them out. I only got like three. Okay, and so as I'm going through there, okay, Charles Darwin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Charles Darwin was one of them, and that's the Origin of Species. From this, the theology, if you will, is not even theology, it's anti-theology, but the doctrine that came from him, from other people, spread out in pyramids, because they took what he had to say and built onto it long after he was gone. And it's still being built on.
Yeah.
State of Kansas was one state that had it in where we could teach creation and evolution. That's gone. That's gone. We were one of 50 states that did that, okay? And they made fun of us for that, and it's gone. And so guess what? Did he influence it? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Every kid who's in school is influenced by that. Karl Marx, Frederick Engels, Communist Manifesto, okay? Just in the last 100 years, 100 million people have paid the price because of this type of an idea. This is not going away, okay? Communism is not going away. I repeat that. And in our country, it's been prevalent for a long time, and it's not on the decline. It is on a serious increase, okay? And what's the difference between socialism and communism? We did that in a teaching before. About 5 years, okay? It's the slow progression up to it. That's the end goal. Sigmund Freud piggybacked off of Charles Darwin, because he said, if there is no God, then why do we have to feel? So what he did with the species and the evolution, he did the evolution for psychiatry and psychology based on a godless environment, okay? That only actions that took place with you are affecting you, okay? Sigmund Freud is one of the big ones that made effect to it as well. John Dewey, okay? This one I had no idea. He's the founder of modern education. Humans are autonomous, is what he said. They do not need to have an authority above them and can evolve their own system. He took some of all the other people. He was in the 19 early 30s, okay, and took what they had, and he is the father of our modern education system, okay, which affects all kinds of people. And our education system bleeds over to all kinds of other countries and other nations and continents. And so these people, so you think about that, where your influence can, you know, you think about that with Charles Darwin. He had no idea that Sigmund Freud was going to take his stuff and go crazy with it. Think about the stuff that we do and the foundations that we lay out, and somebody behind us takes that and goes like, hey, and they go and they make these, and so we make the positive changes as well. Okay, let's turn here to Ephesians 4. This is where we will start. Ephesians 4, 1, and then 17 through 24 on page 198. One of the kids there, once you guys get there, one of you want to read verse number 1, and then we'll kind of switch you around a little bit. Go ahead, sweetheart.
This number 1?
Just read the first one, that's right.
Now hand her the Bible.
She's reading.
I exhort you, therefore, I, the prisoner in the Lord, to walk in a manner worthy of the calling wherewith ye were called.
Exactly right. Exactly what you were called. And so what the calling is. And so as we go through here, what we're looking at is the theme of this is how to maintain a nation. How to maintain, and a nation is nothing more than a building of smaller groups, which comes all the way down to the individual person, but it also goes to one right above that is the family. And the family is huge in this. It is absolutely huge in the establishment of that. And so the breaking down of families, I think about that in Cambodia with the Khmer Rouge. That was the first thing that he did, is he broke up the families, and he had the kids turning in the parents, and there was no family. The school was the family. And so the parents had nothing. As a matter of fact, the parents, you're old, you're in the way, your ideas are old, we're going to usher you off to the fields where we kill you, basically, is what they did. And so this is where we bring down. And so as we go through, we're looking at this in the direction we should be going. And guess what? This is still applicable today as it was when it was written. So 17 through 24, who do I like to read 17 through 20?
I will.
Okay.
This, therefore, am I saying in protesting in the Lord, that no longer ye walk even as the nations walk, in the vanity of their minds, being darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of Yahweh, by reasoning of the ignorance that extincteth within them, by reason of their hearts being turned into stone, who indeed, having become past feeling, have delivered themselves up with wantonness unto making a trade of all impurity with greed. Ye, however, have not thus learned the Christ.
That's it. And so this is where we're looking at it. And so part of the problem today is that We're being moved, okay? We're being moved as a nation in a direction that is against what Yahweh wants. And so we have to reclaim that, and we have to restate it continually. And so it almost becomes a norm where when you speak out against something, that they're like, well, what's wrong with you? How come you're not involved with this? This is where we're going, okay? And that's where we have to be back. No, we are not as a nation. You see that? We are that no longer you walk as the nations walk, that we do not go by what they do. We do not. Some of the Supreme Court justices want to take on European legalities and use those in ours. And I'm like, well, that has nothing to do with our Constitution. You swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, and they have no intention of doing that. And so they want us to take up the laws and the participants of the other nations. Okay, number 21. Who'd like to read 21 through 24? Okay, thank you, Melania.
If at least it is him ye have heard, and in him ye have been taught, even as truth is in Yahushua, that ye were to strip off, as regardeth the former behavior, the old man, whom corrupteth himself according to deceitful covetings, and where to be getting young again in the spirit of your mind, and where to put on the man of new mold, who after Yahweh hath been created in his truthful righteousness and loving kindness.
That's it. And in 23, where it says, and we're to be getting young again, okay, course of light in another direction. Okay, that's what this says, to be getting young again. We like going, hey, I'm all about the young again stuff. But a course of light in another direction. Okay, and so it's to change that. It's to stop that. The same way that, you know, the nations will fall apart. They'll break down. They'll fall apart because they do the same thing century after century for millennia has been going on. That to put on this new direction of light. And that new direction of light, a nation, because what they were showing in this is that most nations never last more than 200 years. Guess what? We're over that. We beat it. Okay? England has beat it too. Okay? But most of the countries fell within that. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really mean anything. Okay? Because a country can be 1,000 years if they are focused and Yahweh is their Elohim. Okay? And they have Christ as their head. And so by virtue of that, it doesn't make a difference what they say, but a young again with a new light and a new direction. Characteristics of the fallen humanities, and these are from some of the scriptures here, and also from the books. And some of the paper, actually, that I went through and read of these two books, referenced some of the scripture here. What I thought was really interesting, that, hey, these people who are writing this, they're also doing the same thing. That, let's go here real quick. I'm going to kind of sidetrack here. I didn't know if I would need to, but I'm going to go here. Flip over to Ezekiel 33, page 824, okay? And I'm going to read this real quick, because this is something that is important, and why people are standing out and saying things and what's to be expected from it. Okay? And page 824, chapter 33. And this is the watchman here we're going to read about. And the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, speak unto the sons of thy people, and thou shalt say unto them, A land when I am bringing upon it with a sword, and the people of the land shall take one man out of the whole number, and appoint him for them as watchman, and shall see the sword coming upon the land, and shall blow the horn and warn the people. Then as for him who really heard the sound of the horn, and took not warning, in other words, they heard it and did not heed it, okay, the sword indeed hath come and taken him away. His blood upon his own head shall remain, because he was warned. The sound of the horn be heard, but not took warning. His blood upon himself shall remain. Whereas he, had he taken warning, his own soul or nephesh should have been delivered. Verse 6. But as for the watchman, when he seeth the sword coming, and hath not blown with the horn, and the people have not been warned, and the sword hath come, and taken away from among them any person, he, for his iniquity hath been taken away, but his blood at the hand of the watchman will I require. In other words, if you see that something's happening and going on, and you do not say something, are you held accountable? Okay? Yeah, we are supposed to speak that out. Now, if people don't hear it and you feel like you're the one person out there and against everything, so be it. Okay? Let those who can have ears to hear, and those who have eyes to see. Okay? So the characteristics of a fallen humanity, and you see this in the, you can flip back over there for everybody. Everybody keep your spaces for where we were. That was Ephesians there. We're going to kind of do a few notes from Ephesians 4 on page 199. Characteristics of a fallen humanity. Okay, and this is universal. Vanity. And this is it. This is vanity from that. Okay, and that's verse 17. And this is what it says. Vanity, what is devoid of truth and appropriateness, perverseness and depravity. Okay, and so a lot of times when people go through this and they're like, oh, wait a minute, that might not be the definition that I'm thinking of with it. Okay, that's why it's important. Perverseness, depravity, devoid of truth and appropriateness. Okay? The thoughts are continually focused on satisfying the desires of the flesh. Hey, there's a new thing that's taken place in history. Okay, and in Romans 8, 5 through 8, it says, For they who according to flesh have their being, the things of the flesh do prefer. But they, according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For what is preferred by flesh is death, whereas what is preferred by the Spirit is life and peace. And I think about this, and it always brought me back to, you know, when I read the book of, what's his face, the guy who was rescued at sea, Unbreakable. or Unbroken. Okay, and reading that book and he went into detail about him being out on the ocean. Nobody had survived that long, and there were two of them in this raft. There was three to start with, no food because the one guy ate all the food. Then he died, and they think he died because he felt so guilty. He felt horrible. He couldn't live with it, and they forgave him for it. But two guys on this raft, and they are literally going. They're barely making it to the point where they're going to die of dehydration, and then the rains would come. And here you are looking overboard, splashing it, and there's just water everywhere. And you just think to yourself, man, I could just fill my stomach right now with this. And you know that that will kill you. It'll kill you pretty fast, actually, when you're dehydrated like that. Because the amount of water it takes to get that salt out of you, it does way worse to you. But here you are where you're thinking. And so when I read that, I'm like, when the flesh desires death. Well, that's not what my flesh tells me when I'm wanting to sin. Yeah. It's not saying, hey, you want to go die? Yeah, it's a great day to die. Okay, but that's how we have to look at it. That, yes, I'm in salt water. And boy, it looks refreshing. And I'm really hot. And that feels good on my face and on my body. But I know that that's poison. It will kill me. It will absolutely kill me. And so I always think of that, like going, okay, yeah, I don't know. What appears may not be exactly what it is. Okay, and again, right in here in verse 7, insomuch as what is preferred by flesh is hostile towards Yahweh. Okay, so our own nature, so for people who have evolved, okay, for those people, their nature is against Yahweh. They are hostile towards Yahweh. So is it any surprise to us when you try to talk to them? Well, the evolution's silly and they get hostile. Well, of course. That's what it says. It says that it's hostile. Prefer to flesh is hostile towards Yahweh. For unto the law of Yahweh, it doth not submit itself. Neither, in fact, can it, because they have not submitted either. Okay, they're submitting to their flesh. So they are not going to submit to Yahweh. They, moreover, who in the flesh have their being, cannot please Yahweh. Okay, and so that's it. That's what we're looking. Well, if you evolve, do you really care about pleasing Yahweh? Okay, first of all, you're going to try to disclaim that he even exists. And I'm like, well, that's pretty obvious. It's on the heart of every man, okay, that he does. But the characteristics of a fallen humanity, darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of Yahweh. This is all from the scripture that we read. Being deceived by the adversary's lies. Okay, and this is a good one, because as they grow, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And what's funny is they play one upon each other. So in other words, one comes out, and now as soon as that's our baseline, everything's reset. And so now everything stems from that lie. And so if you try to go back to the original lie and undercut it, they look at you like going, well, this is already accepted. You know, it's like peer review now in science. Do you know what peer review is? Yeah. Okay? It's a whole group of people who are like-minded writing papers and then passing them to each other, and they say, yep, I approve, I approve. It's been peer-proven. Well, Hitler did that too. Okay? Yeah. Hitler peer-reviewed all of his stuff, and every single thing went through and was all approved. Yeah. Look at you. You are right on. Okay, this is what peer review is, and this is where we are. And so now peer review is passing today in our own country, as everybody agrees, is all in agreement. It's end of story. Don't even ask any more questions. Sit down and color and be quiet. It's already settled, and so this is what we can expect. But the adversary's lies. There are no moral absolutes, and truth is relative. Yeah. Being blind to the truth. Okay, 2 Corinthians 4:4. In whom the Yahweh or Elohim, I'm sorry, the Elohim of this age, okay, being the adversary, hath blinded the minds of unbelieving to the end they may not discern the radiance of the glad message of the glory of the Christ. Okay, so is it a shock when we see this? And people, that's why when we go out and we're, how can you not see this? You want to shake somebody. How do you not see this? Okay, because they're blind to it. They're going through the motions. You know, it's like when you watch The Walking Dead and they have brains. That's, you know, the only thing on their mind. Brains, the flesh. Okay, it's the same thing. That these are zombies that we're really dealing with. The characteristics of fallen humanity. By reason, this was what's funny. By reason, so think about that you reason for these things. Okay, of the ignorance that exists within them, of their hearts being turned into stone. This is all from those stuff we read. Ignorance of Yahweh and his ways are by choice. Okay, are by choice. And so if somebody doesn't want this, they will look the other way and they will grab a hold of any doctrine that supports what they want to do. And it is by choice. We have to look at that. Rebellion against Yahweh. Okay, and this is where it starts, and it's systemic. It builds upon itself. Loss of sensitivity to their conscience. So somebody, you know, most people when they're being raised, it's easy to grasp, do unto others as you'd want them to do unto you, regardless of what religious or background that you have. Just makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, it makes sense until maybe you get a little bit bigger, or you see something that you want and you think you can take it and get away with it. But eventually, as you start doing this, at first it might plague you where you're like, oh man, I really feel bad about that. When you start feeling the shame and the sin, and you lose that you become callous to it, sin no longer plagues their conscience. Okay? And the coveting of now what we see. And so when you see those ten steps for the fall of a nation, you see that these are all within this. All of these things lead from one to move you from one step to the next to the next to the next. And when we become complacent, it's you know, where people feel like, well, everybody else is doing it, I might as well do it too. And it's sometimes tough to be like, oh man, I've been in there before. I'm like, ah! You're like going, okay, do what's right and let the chips fall where they may. Ephesians 2:1-7. One page back. 1-7. And how about an adult, if they would for me, read this here. Okay, page 197.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Unto you also, being dead by your offenses and sins, in which at one time you walked, according to the age of the world, according to the prince of the authority of the air, of the spirit that now energizeth, and the sons of disobedience, among whom also we all had our behavior at one time in the covetings of our flesh, doing the things desired by the flesh and the mind, and were children by nature of anger, even as the rest. But Yahweh, being rich in mercy, by reason of the great love wherewith he loved us, although we were dead by our offenses, gave us life together with the Christ. By favor ye have been saved, and raised us up together, and seated us together in the heavenlies in Christ.
That's it. That's exactly right. And so the first part of that, you look at like 1-3. Okay, 1-3, according to the age of the world, talking about all these things, that you have the two different groups of people, and that it's available to any of those people who will come before and take it and humble themselves and submit themselves. It's available for them to do it as well. But those people that do not want it are not going to do it, and they will actually fight the other way. And not only is that, because you think about this with today's, the populism of tolerance, you know, and acceptance. And I think to myself, what if you had to pick between a neighbor who was a Christian and a person who was, you know, somebody who was rough? Who would you rather have? You know, who'd you rather have as your neighbor? And yet, the attacks come out, and that's why I look at it all the time, the attacks come out against Christ. It's always against Christ that these are coming about. And so when we're trying to determine what is it that there's no tolerance for Christianity. Okay, well, Christianity is intolerant. That's what people will say. It's intolerant. I'm like, well, this is Yahweh's creation, okay, and this is his laws, and these are his commandments, okay, and so I'll live by them, and that's fine, but let me do what I would like to do, okay, and if you feel like I'm being intolerant to you, so be it, okay, but I'm not coming against you and hurting you. And that's what does come against the Christians, and what's always come against them, and what will continue. Characteristics of fallen humanity: have abandoned all restraint, social or spiritual, obsessed with seeking pleasure. And what we see that now today, I say that today, but you go all the way through history, and there were much worse periods of time, okay, where people were doing this. And so where we look at it and we think to ourselves, yeah, our country's, you know, people say, oh, these are the last days, we're in ruins. And I'm like going, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We live in a great time period. You know, and what would you want to switch? Would you want to go back 200 years in this country? And I'm like going, no, I think I don't know if my nose would be able to take it. You know, all the things that you think about, you know, the luxuries that we have and the blessings that we have, we are in a wonderful time period, and we can talk to people about it, and we can share our beliefs and share things with them and share the truth to those that want to hear. Have insatiable desires, okay? The decline of a nation, again, from Kirby Anderson. Three areas that led to a nation's decline. So he kind of summed it up in the best way. He said, these are the periods that go through, that you go from this to this to this, that you move down these periods. The 10 periods of those. But he said there's three areas that lead a nation in decline. And it's very easily to sum them up. and the decline of the family, because the family is the core root. It is it. It is the essential building block. And he talked about that with the fathers, about how the fathers have, a lot of blame is on the fathers for the fathers shirking away, going some way. Now recently a lot with the women, for women doing what they're wanting to do and leaving for something else. And so the decline of the family, the breaking up of the family is an element. And you see that in, you know, in any socialist type of run country, that the family is not important. It is not important at all. As a matter of fact, the only job of the family is to push the state's agenda. That's the only thing you're required to do. The decline of values. Okay? And they showed Rome and Greece in this, because they were wonderful, wonderful time periods where they had technology, they had very smart people, they had, you know, cutting edge, they were way ahead of their time for the things that they were doing, and yet they still fell apart and broke apart. Okay, and why? And they that's what they're linking the two. And spiritual decline, that the people go away from what they, you know, as they became reliant on other things. And so as I'm going to close up here, okay, on time, communism and Yahweh, because this is one of the things, and I'm going to show this. There is, people don't understand that, and so they think, well, communism, can you be a communist and a Christian? Okay, well, you know, can you be a murderer or a rapist and be a Christian? Okay, so as people go through and look at that, and I'm like going, communism and Yahweh. These are some of the facts about communism and how communism stands against any religion, to especially for God, okay, Yahweh. The Soviet communist states carried out a comprehensive war on religion. He, Mikhail Gorbachev, lamented that the Bolsheviks, his predecessors, even after the Civil War ended in the early 20s, during a time of peace, and in quotes there, had continued to tear down churches, arrest clergymen, and destroy them. Okay, why would you do this? Okay, is this tolerance? Is this a tolerance? Okay, this no longer this is no longer understandable or justifiable. Atheism took rather savage forms in our country at that time, and that was Mikhail Gorbachev saying that about what happened with it. Soviet Union, reflective of the communist world as a whole. Remember, this is where the birthplace of it that came from. Engels was Austrian or German. He's one of the two of those. Marx, okay, the two of these guys together that came up with this whole ideology. But Soviet Union was the birth of it. This is where it came from. Reflective of the communist world as a whole, was openly hostile towards religion, all religions, and officially atheist. Okay? That's what they claim. Not me claiming it, that's what they claim. Okay? Communism took no stance on religion. That's what they said. Took no stance on religion, you just can't have it. Okay, that's our stance. Okay? But took the position that there was no God. So we don't take a stance on it, but there's no God. And that's what you need to know, and that's what needs to be taught. Okay? This is communism. And so when people are, as it's becoming accepted, and the colleges are running rampant with this stuff right now, and have been since, you know, probably the 60s, maybe even all the way back into the 40s, that atheism translated into form of vicious anti-religion that have included often brutal campaign to eliminate the belief. This is what stemmed from it. And so it was one aspect to the next. Communism and any religion do not mix. The roots of this hatred and intolerance of religion lie in the essence of the communist ideology. Marx dubbed religion the opioid of the masses, okay, and append that communism begins where atheism begins. In other words, the two are born together, one together with each other. Speaking on behalf of the Bolsheviks in his famous October 2nd, 20 speech, Lenin stated matter-of-factly, "We do not believe in God." Okay? And so when people need to know these facts, that as these things come up with the communism and socialism, that people can speak against it. Oh, well, that's just against religion. It's just, it removes our religion. And everybody, no, it doesn't. Go back to the documents. Go back to the founding of it to see exactly what they said. Lenin insisted that all worship of a divinity is necrophilia. Okay, these are direct quotes here on these. He wrote in November 1913 letter that any religious idea, any idea of any God at all, any flirtation even with a God, is the most inexpressible foulness, the most dangerous foulness, the most shameful infection. Okay, that is a quote from Lenin. Okay, so he is the founder of this, that brought this in. Karl Marx, Lenin was the guy who was his first tier tyrant to bring this into play, and this is how that was started. Lenin brought it in. This is what was the in bringing into it. Okay, this University of Virginia professor, he translated Lenin's stuff as he read it, and in it he says, in the letter, that the type of infection Lenin was referring to was a venereal disease. Okay, so if there's any doubt about how communism and religion intermix, go back. Do not let the people who tell you, the sweet-selling, you know, snake oil salesman, yeah, that hey, here's what it really is. Okay, this is where it came from. That's where I got the information from. The last part of this here, and then we're gonna close on a positive note here, I promise. But I think it's important because I'm seeing too much of this right now, where the paths of communism or socialism or even what the agenda is. We don't want to call it by name, but this is what it is. Okay, Karl Marx did the 10 planks of communism or pillars of communism. What stands it up? What are our fundamentals that will usher it in? And I want to go over these with you. And as I do these, as I go through these, I want you to think to yourself, how many of these are already completed? How many are completed and how many are well underway? Abolition of property in land and application of all rents of lands to public purpose. Under this administration, the biggest land deal in the South, Southwest, all the way up into the, almost up to Idaho, the biggest amount of federal land has been just recently been done. Okay, just being taken left and right. Heavy progressive or graduated income tax. I would say that's a check. We got that already. Okay. Abolition of all rights of inheritance. Okay. So nothing is inherited to you. When somebody dies, you don't get anything. It's all the states. Everything belongs to the states. We're on our way to that. I wouldn't say that that's done. Confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Centralization of the credit in the hands of the state by means of national bank and state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Okay, we're well on the way to that as well. Number six, centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. This is what every tyrant or dictator that's trying to turn socialism or communism, this is the first one that they do right here, the number one. Okay, Venezuela is the last one that just did this. This is where they started from. Extension of factories and instrument production owned by the state and bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. Yeah, common plan. I always love that terminology. Equal liability of all labor, establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industry, in other words, putting them together, gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country. And you see this, part of this has taken place where the EPA, the farming, they give loans. Did you know that you can go get a loan for your house from the farm thing and not have a farm? They also were one of the largest gun purchasers in our government recently. Okay, and you're like going, for what? Okay, but this is where these things are being put together for more power for the state. Free education for all children in public schools, abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, combination of education and industrial production. Okay, that's it. And so when we see these, this is what Karl Marx wrote about to usher it in. And so every time that we hear one of these so-called common sense ideas that looks along one of these lines, this is what's taking place. We are doing this slow route. Remember I showed you that the Fabian socialists, their motto was the turtle. Okay, they move along slow, but it said on the turtle, when I bite hard. Okay, this is what they do, and they don't give up any ground. Everything goes in with a barbed hook. Does not come out. And so when we see these things, we have to fight against these and know what we're looking at. All right. A couple of scriptures here so we can close on. For the nation and the kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish. Ye nations shall be utterly wasted. That's Isaiah 60 verse 12. Let's, as we're getting ready here, we have one more to go to. How happy the nation whose Elohim is Yahweh, the people who have chosen as his own inheritance. And so these are timeless. It has nothing to do with who's in charge or anything else, but these are what we need to look at. Okay, 2 Chronicles, let's end there. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, going to be on page 443. Any kids want to read that for me? Actually, start in 13. Read 13 and 14 for me.
Esther, do you want to read it?
13 and 14.
Right there.
if it shut up the heavens that see, there'll be no rain, or if I lay commanded on the locust to divert the land, or if I send pestilence among my people. If my people upon whom my name is called shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I myself hear out of the heavens and forgive their sin and heal their land.
That's it, okay? And so that's where it can take place. It can take place at any point. It can take place if they do that. And so it's one of the things to know that if my people, okay, will turn and humble themselves and pray and repent for it, that it can bring about a change, and we don't have to go through the same old history that all the other nations go through. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close here with the word. Thank you, Yahweh, for the opportunity to go through, to study your ways, to know as a nation what is required of us, and that is as we are leaders, and that we are also followers of Christ, that we are to go out and spread the good news and spread the message, and have that chip upon our shoulder and that light upon us, and that just a gleam in our eyes, that when people see us, that they will see your Son, that they will see Christ, and that as we open our mouths and speak, that we are speaking of great hope and joys, not of the doom and the gloom, but we're speaking of the joys and the wonders of the things that are available for you. And for anyone who will humble themselves and come before you and walk in your ways, Yahweh, we thank you for that, that we go out, that we can, that we are the ones that people are seeking out, and that as they seek us out, they're coming for the good news and the good message. For we are as foreigners in this land, because we are not of this earth. And so even as we go through, that we know that this is just a stage, or just a phase, and that there will be justice and there will be equality here under you, Yahweh, as you are running things in the end. And so we thank you. We look forward to the reign of your Son, that we are to be there, and that we will be called up. We thank you for that, that this is our encouragement, that we have great hope in everything that's been laid in store, and the promises that have been forecast and told, that we are taking advantage of and taking place with us right now, that it is great joy for us to walk in your ways, and great joy for you, Yahweh, that you can see those walking in faith and taking what you write and what you have written down in your words, and they take it to heart and they put it in action, and then they see the things happen, and the faith grows, and they spread this, and it's like a wildfire across a dry plain with a wind, that these things can just take off and just be consumed. And so we thank you for that. We thank you, Yahweh, that you are encourage us, and that we come before you to know you and know your ways. And we thank you for the words that you put upon us, and for the blessings that you continually give. We just speak this all in your Son's name, Christ Jesus. My children, I call you to incline yourself and bring yourself before me, that I may be able to lay my hands upon you as a child, as you humble yourself, that you may be able to see the things, the trueness that I am delivering. As a father would put and cuddle a small child, for comfort, I do this for you, that it is great joy for me to spend time with you. As you put off time every day to come before me and inquire within me, and don't just give me a list, for I know the things that are on your heart, but converse with me and speak with me, that I may be able to speak to you and listen even after you supplicate and you intercede with me, that I may be able to give you direction. For if it is only you that is talking, that you will not hear my voice, and I am trying to communicate with you, and I want to talk with you, and I want to give you revelation, and I want to give you wisdom, and I want to give you information to be passed down to you, for things that will bless you, will sanctify you, that will further my plans, and that will keep you safe and keep you comforted and away from the snares of the adversary. For I call you against these things, that you may know what is ahead of you on the road, and that if you are walking in my path, that I will steer through you. I will steer you by the way of those things and those snares that you will be aware of, and you may be able to call out to others that are following you to avoid this area. Avoid here, because there are snares everywhere. And so I call upon you to know me and come before me and seek this. I see that there's healings that have been spoken for and waiting for it to take place. And I'm calling you to claim these things, to stand up and take these things, these issues of blood. Someone with a problem with blood, whether it's an infection or some kind of a disease within their blood, that they're waiting, that they're standing there, that they feel that there's nothing left that can be done. Yahweh's calling for you to grasp hold of these things, that there is hope, and that He's ready, that there's nothing too big for His great delight for Him to reach down to you and speak these things, that you are whole, stand up and walk according, and tell the wonderful things that I have given.